drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. Today we're joined by Kayla Hollitz, who helps creatives make a killer impression online and build sustainable, organic communities as a community coach. She's also a PR and social media professional by day and a short-form poet by night. She's recently launched several passion projects, so we're excited to chat with her today on the Chasing Creative Podcast. So hi, Kayla, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Ashley and Abby. Thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I am just really excited to be here and share a little bit of my story.
Yeah, thank you so much for agreeing to join us here. We're really excited to talk to you because we know you've got so many creative projects going on and we can't wait to hear what you've got going on with those. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on in your life right now and how you got here?
Sure. So, sorry, you guys. I'm just trying to think of where to start. So for anybody who is listening who maybe hasn't met me before, of course, like Ashley said, my name is Kayla, and I help creative bloggers and entrepreneurs build communities online. And it's interesting because it kind of was a happy accident that I ended up finding myself in this niche, but it really was because I've been blogging for about 2 years now, and I started blogging for PR professionals since that's what I do for my full-time job. And after I'd been blogging for a while, I really found that creative bloggers and entrepreneurs are really my people. They were the people I wanted to get up in the morning and talk all day to. And so after I found that, I launched this Twitter chat about a year ago. We're coming up on almost a year old, which is really, really exciting. And so when I launched that, which was under the hashtag Create Lounge, and we were talking to creative bloggers and entrepreneurs and just chatting a lot about not only the business and blogging side of things, but also more of those transparent topics as well. And after I kind of launched that community, a lot of people reached out to me and were telling me when I was trying to figure out, you know, where is my blog heading into this new year, they really let me know that they don't necessarily know me just for PR and blogging, but they know me for community building. And that was really my big aha moment where I thought, you know, this is a platform that nobody's really owning right now. And this is a space where I already have kind of laid this foundation. So ever since then, I've just been really building myself in this space. And it's been amazing to connect with awesome ladies like you, Ashley and Abby. And yeah, the rest has been history.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I love that it all sort of happened organically and you didn't sit there and ponder for hours and hours like, okay, what do I want to be known for on the internet? Because I think we all feel that pressure to, okay, come up with your thing. And sometimes your thing finds you and you just need to come by it naturally.
Yes.
I love that your platform kind of created itself, that takes the hashtag Create Lounge just like one step further organically.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much, you guys, for that. And I always tell people, I think it's really funny that my community helped me find what I like to call my edge. So what makes me different in my niche, and my community helped me find my edge of community. So it's just been awesome.
Well, like we said, you are kind of internet famous now for growing online communities, especially your Twitter chat. You discovered the theme of community was something worth pursuing. And did you say within the last year? Like, how long have you been intentionally pursuing community as your platform?
Yeah, that's a really, really great question, Abby. And I would say that really intentionally going for it, I would say probably since I redesigned my website and moved it to Squarespace, which was around June of 2015. So it's been a little bit over half of a year now. And it's just been really incredible because although I've only been doing it for that long, it's also interesting because I've almost been kind of doing it all throughout, because even though in my early days, I'll be honest, I rebranded quite a few different times. I was kind of one of those girls where every 3 months it was like, oh, I wanted to do this or that. But the one thing that always stayed constant was how much I was investing in my community. And the really interesting part that a lot of people reached out to me and they were like, aren't you afraid to rebrand? And I always said, well, no, because you know, the people that I'm investing in, they're going to come along with me because I care about them. And I think that's what happens when you run a blog and a business that's very people first. And so, yeah, I would say I've been in this space for a while, but probably even longer.
That is a really great point that, like you said, you've been building, no matter what your brand was in past years, you've been building that community and we're able to make them feel special enough or included enough that when you decided to change blogging platforms and brands and everything, that they came along with you. And I would wager that most of them did it without a second thought as well, which is that true kind of loyalty audience that everyone is really looking for.
Absolutely. And I think you bring up such a great point, Abby, which is loyalty, right? And the only way that you're going to build loyalty is by building trust. And the only way that you're going to be able to build trust is by giving value. And that value is going to show that you're really keeping your community in mind and you're creating creating content for them, which I think is really, really important. So I think all of those elements just kind of work together in this beautiful cycle of community. And it's really incredible to see a lot more creative bloggers and entrepreneurs in this space who are going to be investing even more so into their communities in this new year.
Yeah, that is so true. And I just think a lot of times that, like, I love what you said about giving value, and that's how you build trust and loyalty in your audience. And sometimes I think so many people feel like they don't have value to bring to the table. Like, they think, oh, I'm just a writer. Oh, I just paint watercolors at night in my spare time. Like, what would you say to someone who's having trouble finding that value for their creative community or who doesn't know how they can contribute to build that trust?
Yes, such a good question, Ashley. And I think this is something that is so huge, because I really try to talk a lot about this on a lot of my scopes that I do, which is really just telling people and really affirming for them that they have a voice, right? So everybody has something that they can bring to the table that nobody else can. And even if you see someone else who's doing a similar thing than what you're doing, so maybe you're a photographer, and of course there's other photographers out there, or you're a writer and there's other people writing out there, nobody else is going to be able to do exactly what you do and bring your perspective and experience to your creative work. So I say the best way to really silence that is by not only creating what you do, but launching that creative work as well. And that's why I like to spend a lot of time on passion projects, even outside of what I do online, because I think it's really important to kind of, what I like to say, flex those creative muscles and make sure that no matter what I'm doing, I'm always, you know, putting it forward and having that courage. And what you do and what you launch is going to inspire other people. And I know anybody who's listening who is kind of maybe sitting on one of those passion projects, like, really just get started in it, fall in love with it, and then launch it. And remember how important it is to keep chasing that creative work, because we need it.
Yes, we definitely do. I love what you say about, you know, do follow your passions and do those passion projects that you really want to work on in your spare time, and then have the courage to launch them and kind of, you know, get rid of that fear that you're not good enough or you don't have a unique enough voice to put out into the world. Do you ever find that there is a passion project? I guess, is there ever room for a passion project to stay a passion project and not launch it out into the world?
Ooh, that is a really good question. I will be honest, I am somebody who is quite in love with the launch process myself. I think it's really fun to share a lot of my different creative work, but I do have a few different unfinished passion projects that I am creating kind of behind the scenes for people in my life, right? So those are something where I may not share a poetry collection that I'm writing for my future daughter, or that I'm writing for, you know, another person. But at the same time, I think that those passion projects are still really important because they'll still give you life, especially if you are creating them for yourself, for somebody else that you know, and that's a loved one. And so I think, yeah, there's room to have passion projects that you have, that you hold dear to you, that nobody else necessarily has to see, but it can still have value to you, and that makes it still valuable of your time and effort.
Yeah, that's so good to remember too, that just because you're not putting something out there for the likes or the tweets, or, you know, if you're not putting something out there to sell necessarily, that doesn't mean that it's not worth going after in your own time. Like, even if it never becomes something that's really meant to be launched, like you said, if it stays really personal or if it's for one particular person, that's still going to be really worthwhile for the people who do get to see it.
Yes, absolutely. And to piggyback on that, even if you are launching something, you don't necessarily have to go into that passion project thinking, oh my gosh, this has to be my next big business idea. I have to make X amount of money off of it. I have to build this certain web presence with it. I think that it's really important to kind of ground yourself and make sure that you're creating for the sake of creation with those projects. And if something comes along that's a great opportunity, that's amazing, but it still is so worth it, even if you launch something and it may not necessarily get the same reaction or something that you may have thought, but it's just so important to keep going after what you're passionate about. And even if it's something that's different than what you do professionally, I always say, like, I really think it still is going to help you professionally, because it's going to flex those creative muscles and make sure that you're always looking at things in a different way.
Yeah, I like that, how I think everything that you do influences the other parts of your life. And so whether it's something you're doing at home that influences what you're doing at work, or something that you're doing at work that influences those little side projects, I don't think you can separate, like, your creative self from your, you know, quote unquote real life self. And I think that's part of why, you know, Ashley and I wanted to start this podcast, is those two pieces of yourself, I don't think they are separate. I think your creative self influences your, you know, walking around in the world self, and vice versa. And part of what we have to do as creative people is make time to kind of, like, honor that little part of the self that wants to create, that wants to do something just for the sake of doing something.
Absolutely. And I love everything that you just said. I basically am over here looking like a raised hand emoji, just because I think that's all just so awesome, Abby. And yeah, I completely agree with all of that. And I like that you said that you really have to carve out that time. And I know something that I have struggled with in the past, and really even now too, is a lot of times as creatives, we can feel like we need to be doing something more productive, right? So we need to be getting X amount of things done. And if we work on this passion project that may be different than what we're doing professionally, we see it as we're taking time away from, you know, whatever we're working on professionally. But really, we're allowing ourselves to do what we really feel that we need to do in order to be creative and be our best creative self. And that in turn is going to help us when we turn back to our professional work. It's going to help us be even more so productive, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that is exactly what I needed to hear as we start heading into the new year, because I am one of those people who gets really caught up into, okay, how well am I using my time and how productive have I been today? Because I work from home with a toddler and I don't have a ton of time for creative projects or even for getting my client work done during the day. So I feel like if I just sit down and like want to just doodle in my journal or write like really random little scraps about what happened during the day, I feel like it's such a waste of time. And it's a good reminder that it's worth fighting that feeling because what you're doing is really worthwhile, even if you can't see it or measure it.
Absolutely. And I like that you said journaling as well, Ashley, because I've been doing a lot of vision journaling myself over the past, I guess I would say, month. And I really wanted to see if I spent kind of that last hour that I normally spend, you know, wrapping things up on Twitter and finishing up email conversations and all of that, if I spent that time kind of slowing down, getting my creative juices flowing, and just kind of putting pen to paper with journaling some of those vision exercises. And it's been really incredible so far. And like you said, you know, it's really important to carve out that time, because even if we don't necessarily feel like today it was super productive, the way that we end up feeling and that kind of attitude shift that we have towards all of our work is going to be worth it in the end.
So true. So one of the things that you've recently been carving out time for that maybe doesn't feel like a super productive thing, but is definitely a worthwhile project, is the poetry collection that you recently released. So could you tell us a little bit about your poetry and how you make time for that and how you decided to self-publish your work?
Absolutely. So I am happy to say that after almost 2 years of work, my illustrator, Hannah Lewis, who is actually from the UK, which it was so fun to collaborate with someone internationally, and I learned a heck of a lot through that, of course. But it's really great to say that we did publish on November 13th of 2015. So it's been really fun to finally have it from our hands to everybody else's. But yeah, it was really difficult to be able to really try to balance out the time, because when I first started it, I was in college. So I was balancing out a few different internships, and I had a job, and I did school full time, and I was blogging at the time. And so, of course, you know, anybody listening, I'm sure you all have different things that are all kind of going on in your life as well while trying to still be there for your loved ones, and it can be really difficult. But, you know, I really do feel that it was one of those processes where it was kind of the slow and steady wins the race kind of things where, you know, while it may have taken maybe a little bit more time than we had first thought, it was still so incredibly worth it. And it's interesting to kind of look back at the collection and be able to see kind of how much I've grown, because I really do feel like it was almost a different form of self that was writing that collection. And now it's just really fun as I look forward, and I'm already outlining my next one. So I definitely have been bit by the publishing bug, and I'm just, yeah, it's just been really great.
So what was it like then to self-publish? Did you try to go a traditional publishing route first, or was your first thought, you know, self-publishing is for me, I want to do this on my own and kind of harness my own resources to get this done?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the name of my poetry collection is Brave Little Bones. And when I first started thinking about this collection, it came about in a kind of silly way. So it really was because I had this Tumblr blog on Tumblr. And so when I was posting a lot of my poetry throughout my time in college on there, a lot of people were saying, you know, I love seeing your poetry online, but I'd love to be able to hold it. And that was something that was really powerful to me. And I never, ever in my life set out to write a book or a novel or anything of that sort. So it's been pretty amazing to now have a book on my book stand that's my own. I think because it did come about in the non-traditional way, I kind of wanted to be more non-traditional with the publishing as well. And I knew that I wanted this to be a passion project, and more so I wanted to have full control over the final edits and kind of what happened with it, especially since I think poetry can be a very vulnerable kind of art. And so I knew for my first one, at least, I'm not saying that I would never be open to traditional publishing, because I know that that can be have really incredible opportunities. But I knew for my first one, I wanted to have self-publishing kind of be the thing that anchored it, because again, I wanted that full control. And it also allowed me to be able to set my own timeline, which I think was really huge, especially since I had all these other things going on. And it allowed me to, yeah, collaborate with this just absolutely incredible illustrator from, you know, halfway across the world. And so I'm really glad at the end of the day that we chose to self-publish. And I think it really helped me to kind of dip my toes in that way, because like any creative, it can be really daunting to kind of put your words to paper, but not only that, have it be something that's permanent. And I knew that once I felt like I was 100% all in to the collection and it was exactly how I wanted it to be, I didn't necessarily want anybody to touch it. It was just enough for me to be able to have that feeling and then just launch that out.
Well, congratulations on launching that. That must have been such an empowering feeling to know that you had completed such a huge project that you'd been working on for so long. And not only that, that you'd collaborated with others and you coordinated the whole launch yourself, and that it was something even that your audience had asked for from that first Tumblr blog where people said, "We want to be able to hold your poetry." Like, that must have been such an amazing feeling to go into as you're launching this book.
Yes, it absolutely was. And of course, while you're writing, you know, your first book or whatever it may be, you're always thinking about the next one. And so now it's really great because I told myself, I said, I can't work on anything else until I get this book out there. And finally, it's out there. So now I feel like going into the new year, I can really kind of focus in, play around, experiment again, and just kind of see what happens with this new idea I have.
Well, I know we've kind of talked about Create Lounge and we've talked about your poetry collection. I want to point out that you're doing all of this in addition to a full-time job still. So can you tell us a little bit about your day job and then also how a day job in PR and social media has translated into helping you build this online community and also to kind of learn how to launch yourself and to launch your own projects?
So my day job, I work at a really great PR agency, and I do a lot of social media work. And one of my favorite projects that I actually get to do is for a few of our different clients, they actually host pretty regular Twitter chats. And so it's been really awesome to see my professional career kind of blend with my personal passion of Twitter chats. And so I know a lot of people joke that all I'm doing all day is Twitter chats, but I absolutely adore it and I love it. And I think that really this PR and social media world has definitely brought me to where I am right now with my online business, with community coaching, because I started blogging really because I wanted to put myself in a place where I could stand out when I graduated college from everybody else who was also graduating college. And we, of course, were all going for the same jobs. And so what ended up being the reason, you know, one of the sole reasons why I've been chosen for a lot of different positions that I've been able to gratefully hold so far after graduating in December. It's just been really incredible to see everything that I've been doing for blogging professionally really be able to cross over and just help me out personally as well with my poetry blog and with taking it in this new direction of community, and to see that regardless of if the person is, you know, the PR professional I was writing before or for the creative blogger and entrepreneur that I'm writing for now, all of those people in my audience and in my community have really just rallied around me. And yeah, it's just been really incredible.
Yeah, it sounds like it has been a fun ride, regardless of how busy you've been. So I know you also launched a side business as a community coach recently. And can you tell us a little bit about how you decided to go about doing that? And then also kind of what your goals are as you go into the new year? Like, what do you want to accomplish with this coaching side hustle?
So I really started community coaching after I was actually thinking about first going into monetization and coming out first with a ebook. Just because, of course, I'm a writer, and that's just what I really, really enjoy doing. But really, when I got down to it, I just kept feeling like I really want to work one-on-one with really passionate creative entrepreneurs who want to build something bigger than themselves and know that in order to really hit that stride of success, they want to also pour into their people, give them value, and make sure that they are connecting with the right people rather than just anybody who's going to give them a page view. And so that was really my big kind of aha moment before I started outlining an ebook. And so then I decided instead of going with an ebook, I would start to think about, okay, what are some one-on-one services that I can go with? And that's kind of when creative coaching kind of popped into my mind. And, you know, I played around with a few different words, but creative coaching just really felt like that was the terminology I wanted to use. And it's just been really great working with people behind the scenes, making sure that the packages are what people need. And I just know every single time that I hop on a client call and we're talking about all of the nitty-gritty strategy behind community building, from all the way to creating an action plan for them for being able to launch this community. It's just been really awesome collaborating with so many incredible creative entrepreneurs and seeing them grow communities that have the same heart as Create Lounge does.
Yeah, I love that the whole idea behind this is kind of being able to go deeper with your community and bringing them even more value and even more of the sort of encouragement and inspiration that you can offer them. Because I think so often we get caught up in, like you said, going after the page views or going after like the social media numbers. And it's just as important, if not more important, to go after that deeper connection with people on a one-on-one basis, even though it doesn't necessarily get you those higher numbers that we're trained to want.
Absolutely. Because that traffic at the end of the day, where the number may feel good and help you feel warm and fuzzy for a little bit, what's going to make you feel so, so fulfilled online is having a group of people that are like-minded, who are rallying around you and who support just about everything that you do because you're constantly pouring value into them. Because where you invest your time, and when you're investing that time in your people, they're going to invest in you back. So I think that that's really important moving forward. And I like to say that it's kind of my names over numbers approach. And what that means is I think it's really important to treat our online audiences like we want to have them be somebody where we're on a first name basis with them, rather than they're just another stat in our analytics or they're just another page view. And I think that kind of mentality is going to be hopefully coming to even more of a fruition in 2016.
Yeah, and that's so wise, even when it comes to, like, we've been talking this whole time about launching and putting your creative projects out there for people. And I think one of the reasons that creatives are so hesitant to put their work out there, aside from the fear of having bad feedback, is this fear that nobody's going to listen to what you have to say, which is really, really horrible to think about, that you like put your heart out there on the line and nobody cares, which is even worse than the negative feedback in some ways. So I would just love to hear if you have like any encouragement for people who are kind of hesitant about that fear of launching because they don't know if they're just going to be launching to crickets.
Absolutely. And I think that is such an amazing point that you bring up, because that really is the point where I get in and I work with people and we see really amazing things happen. Because when people have something that's really, really incredible, but they're fearing that they're going to launch to crickets, that's when it's time to really, really invest heavily in your community. Because a lot of people will, you know, be focusing in on their design, on their content strategy. And of course, those things are so incredibly important to your success. But I think what a lot of people forget about too is all of that groundwork that you could be laying with your community. And really, why I'm where I am today is because I started investing in my community from day one. And I think it's really important when you're launching something to feel like you're going to be launching to not only people, but the right people for your product or your service. And that's going to come from just really taking the time and effort to building those one-on-one relationships with community. And there really is no hack to doing it. It's just putting in the work and trying to meet with people, whether it be through a tweet or an Instagram comment, all the way from, you know, a video call or phone call or email, or even a podcast episode like this. Any way that you can connect with people is just really awesome. And it's going to help you feel like you're not going to be launching to crickets, and that will be the last thing on your mind.
It sounds like a welcome relief to have launching to crickets to be the last thing on your mind. I know every creative entrepreneur struggles with whether or not someone is going to find value in what they're doing. And I like what you say about having, you know, that community and that connection and being able to just really relate to someone on a much deeper level than a page view or, you know, time on site and all of those analytics that we all think are so important and maybe aren't. And at the same time, I think I love what you say about building a community that's right for your product as well. Because as much as we can talk about, you know, connection and feeling that online back and forth, there's also, you know, kind of the sad reality that we all do in some way, shape, or form have to make money, hopefully doing what we love. And having a community that's set up to just respond well to your product is going to have those people become not only loyal community members, but also loyal community members that convert when you do offer new products and that you do launch something new.
Absolutely. Because when you are launching something, you really want to make sure that it's something that you already know your community members need, right? So that only comes from building this really strong community base of people who are in that target audience, who fit that ideal reader profile that you've created. And you just want to ask those people what they need. It really is as simple as sending out a tweet or an email or having people take a reader survey, whatever it takes. You want to make sure that before you start creating something, especially before you launch something, that it's something that people actually need. And your community members will be a lot more apt to reach out to you and give you honest feedback than somebody who's just coming across your blog for the first time or who has just kind of been lurking on your blog. So I think empowering your community members to give you feedback when you ask is just, I mean, again, you just kind of keep pouring into each other. And I just think that that's where the magic happens, so to speak.
Yes, I love that idea that it's like a conversation, because I always think of the word platform, and so many people hate the idea of building their platform because it feels like you're just standing up there on a stage talking to people who may or may not be listening to you. And it's just such a nicer image and a more true image, I think, if you picture it as being more of like a conversation at a coffee shop where you're really getting to know those people one-on-one and listening to what they need. And my question for you is that after, I mean, I've been doing creative entrepreneur stuff for 3 years now, 3.5 years. And it took me a really long time to first find those spaces on the internet where I could start a conversation with people and where I was comfortable enough on Twitter to actually reply to people and like start a conversation instead of just saying what I had for lunch that day or something stupid like that. So what would you tell someone who's maybe not as familiar with social media and is wondering where they can start cultivating those conversations and those relationships?
Absolutely. That's a really awesome question, Ashley. And I would say first, go where your audience lives. And I know you hear that a lot, but you hear it a lot because it is true. And it's because, you know, if you are somebody who is building a very visual brand, you know, Instagram is going to make a lot of sense for you. If you are somebody who is building, you know, a, maybe you're a writer. I mean, Twitter then may make sense. Or, you know, for creative entrepreneurs, I know Facebook groups can be really huge for creative entrepreneurs. So it really is all about just kind of being on those platforms, seeing what works for you. But not only that, seeing where your people actually are, because even if you enjoy one platform, if your community is completely on another one, you'll want to make sure that you're hitting people where they actually are. And I think that that really only comes with experimenting. And I know a lot of times it can feel like online you have to have everything figured out, even when you're first starting. But I would definitely say to just give yourself the excuse to play around, have some conversations, and see where you enjoy being and then where your audience enjoys being. And then that's when you can kind of start to make those one-on-one connections and start having them go from just an audience member to a community member.
Yeah, converting someone from an audience member to a community member is such a great goal, I think, rather than have, you know, returning audiences or more page views or more page views per visit. I think that creating a community member should be something that more people are trying to track.
I mean, lurkers are still really great. They're still people who are consuming your content, still find you valuable, and they may still be helping you with word of mouth, right? But the really die-hard community members who are sharing your stuff on social and who are hopping on video calls with other people and telling other people how much they love you, I mean, those people are the people that you really want to invest the most amount of your time in, because you're going to be able to really find the most, I mean, let's just say like return on investment basically from your time. Because those are the people who are constantly going to go to bat for you and who are going to rally around you. And I just think it's really important to cater to those people, because they're not just somebody who's going to come to your blog because they like a pretty photo and leave. They're going to stay there, consume the content, comment on your blog, share it, make a conversation with you, maybe on Periscope. I mean, the possibilities are really endless.
So as much as we know that it's really valuable to have those deep connections with people, sometimes, like we said before, you do just need to find that quiet space and carve out the time to do the quieter work of, you know, writing your poetry or whatever it is that you do sort of after hours that you don't necessarily want to be surrounded by other people and other people's ideas. So what would you say, like, how would you say that you know when it's time to sort of step back from your community? Or like, if you're trying to write a blog post and the words just seem like they're echoes of what everybody else is saying because you've spent so much time lately in that online space, like, how do you get your headspace back to your unique ideas?
I know sometimes it can feel like the overconsumption struggle is so, so real, which I think is what you're talking about, Ashley. Mm-hmm. And I think when that happens, that's really that is our cue to really shift ourselves from consuming a lot of content to creating more content, right? So maybe instead of taking that hour in the morning that you normally are reading other people's blog posts and consuming their content that's in your niche, maybe instead you are either creating something of your own, or maybe the content that you're consuming is something that is not necessarily relevant to your niche. So maybe you are somebody who's a writer and instead you want to look up a lot of different photographers on Instagram. And even though that's still going to inspire you, it's not that it's taking away from your thought leadership platform because you may be influenced by somebody else's, if that makes sense. So I think sometimes it can help to kind of distance yourself for a little bit if you feel that you need to.
Yeah, I think we do need to be really careful when we feel like we're getting too much influence from other people. It doesn't necessarily have to mean stepping back from your community, but it can mean stepping back from the internet or putting limits on the internet.
Totally. And I think that's a really important point, because I know a lot of people maybe when they are rebranding or working on a new product or service, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll kind of put up a page and say that, you know, we'll be back in a month, but they don't show up anywhere else. And so I think it's really important to still make sure that you are available or you are around to talk to your community, at least on one platform, whether it's on social, maybe it's blog posts, whatever it may be. Because then it shows that you're constantly investing in your community, even if it's not as much as you normally do, because you have to kind of take that creative hiatus. And what I have learned is when I feel that I'm kind of on the edge of burnout, when I take little mini hiatuses, I always feel like, oh, I just feel so bad. I just feel like I'm not being consistent anymore. But then once I tell people, I have to take a little bit of a break because my creative heart needs it. Everybody always is so understanding because everybody has to do the same thing too. So if you are somebody who is feeling like you are going to burn out soon, or if you feel like you're kind of on the edge right now, don't be afraid to take a little bit of a break because everybody totally understands because they've done it as well. And just make sure that you're always prioritizing your own well-being because you can't really invest as well in your community if you're not investing enough time and love into yourself as well.
Yeah, I like that it's a balancing act and that you can kind of sense when you're on that brink of burnout and you pull yourself back before it happens. I think those are really wise words. Is there any kind of telltale signs that you know when you're getting to that point?
I know I feel that way when I feel so overwhelmed that I feel like I've done a ton of different tasks in a day, but none of it feels productive. I know that that's kind of sometimes a sign for me.
Yeah. Is it just like you're spinning your wheels and can't get anywhere or can't get ahead no matter how hard you try?
Absolutely. Yeah. And really, if I'm feeling like I'm disconnected from my mission, and if I'm second guessing any part of my purpose online, that is really a sign that I need to take some time to make sure that I'm clarifying my vision, making sure that it's still where I want to be heading. Because anytime that we start to second guess something that's really that huge, we want to make sure that we're taking enough time to make sure we're moving in the right direction. Because of course, there are so many different things online that can kind of get us off the right track, whether it may be doubts that we may have, or maybe we're playing the comparison game, whatever it may be. We just want to make sure that anytime we kind of start to see that set in, that we don't settle into that feeling, and we make sure that we nip it in the bud. And if you need to take time in order to make sure that you're getting yourself back on that right path again, do it.
I think it's going to be really freeing for a lot of people to hear you say that, because I know that the guilt people feel from taking a short break from blogging or from social media can be so overwhelming. You just feel like you're being inconsistent, or like people are going to forget about you and will never come see you again. And it's really, really freeing to be able to say, no, it's okay to take a break, and everyone's still going to be there when I get back.
Absolutely. And I think that's so huge, because we just have to know that, I mean, it's really as simple as saying people get it, because they have to do the exact same thing. None of us can be at 110% at all times. And it can feel like everybody else online has it figured out, but none of us really do. We're all just trying to do the best that we can with the energy that we have. And I think as long as we're making sure that we're preserving that energy source and keeping a lot of it for community building, I think that's when we're really going to hit our stride with any type of creative work that we're doing online.
Yes, we are none of us robots. We have to unplug once in a while.
Yeah, I personally have a very difficult time with unplugging. But I know that, you know, after I graduated college, and of course, we kind of get into what everybody else calls the real world, I just realized how important it was to even just simply not have my phone out when I'm with friends or family. And even something as simple as that, can really just help you be present with the people that you're with. And a lot of the times, even if those people aren't doing anything remotely similar to what you're doing professionally, they can still help you because it's a way to kind of unwind. You may get some creative ideas from it from a totally different perspective. And then that's going to help you come back to your creative work when you're going back online and just really do awesome things.
Yeah. So jumping off of that, like where you get a lot of creative ideas from the people you interact with in real life when you set technology aside, have you found that you also have an offline creative community that sort of supports you and helps you in all of your creative goals?
So I do have a kind of local Create Lounge meetup group actually here in Minneapolis, which has been really amazing to meet so many offline friends from online. And even though those people may be kind of in that creative sector, we're all doing completely different things. Some of them have blogs, some of them don't. Some of them are working in social media, some of them are working in completely different areas. And so I think it's just really nice just about every month to get together with them and not necessarily feel like we have to talk about work or all of these other things. I mean, last time we got together, we were talking about green smoothies and volunteering and all of these completely different things than what we all kind of do online. But it's really freeing to be able to get together with creative people and talk about things that aren't always kind of business related to kind of have us have that needed step back before we go back home and we probably step forward and go back online and kind of make awesome things.
Make awesome things. I think that is a great note to kind of wrap things up on. I love that. I'm just going to like write that on a post-it note and stick it above my desk.
I wish I could be more eloquent than that, but it came out and make awesome things. That's basically all that I can say. I think that's all what we're trying to do. And I think as long as we make sure that, you know, we're pushing back any doubts or, you know, feelings of failure or anything like that, and we're just putting things out in the world, or even if we're just creating things for ourselves, that we're always making room for creativity because that's going to make room for everything else that we hold really dear to us.
Yes, I completely agree. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today, Kayla. And before we go, we have a little tradition here because we're both big readers where we like having a mini book club at the end of our episode. So we thought that since you're a poet, maybe you could introduce us into some of your favorite poets or some who have inspired you or anything like that if you've got to share.
Absolutely. So I really, really adore Shinji Moon, and her poetry collection is titled The Anatomy of Being. And I really, really adore her writing because it's so hauntingly beautiful. And it's all very simple and it reads really naturally, but it just really kind of packs a punch at the end. And I just love how much she can do with just a few words. And that always really inspires me when I'm writing because I really am a short form communicator. And although I really like my long form content online, I know that probably the reason why I've been as successful as I have been on Twitter specifically has been because, you know, you only have 140 characters to make an impact. And I try to bring that to all the poetry that I write as well. So Shinji Moon is just absolutely awesome. And I also have to give a shout out to Sierra DeMolder. And she's an awesome spoken word poet, actually, from Minneapolis. And she's just really incredible. And she's written a few different poems that have really helped me through a healing period in my life a few years ago. And so she just has a special place in my heart as well. And I'm sure we could do a whole other podcast episode all about the books that we love. But those are just two people that are really incredible modern poets.
Yeah, I really appreciate those book recommendations because I never know who to read when it comes to poetry. I think it's a hard genre for people to jump into if it's not something that they're naturally inclined toward, but I love everything you said about the magic of poets who say so much with so few words.
I just I really, really value writers who are able to just really have kind of these punchy words when otherwise, if you kind of take them apart from that poem, they may seem just kind of like any other word. But I think that's really the testament of a really great writer.
Cool. I know, as someone who brevity is a very, very tough skill, I also appreciate a short form poem when, like, just in three lines, something can just kind of like grab your heart and squeeze. I really like that.
Absolutely. And I think that's why I'm such a huge, huge fan of haikus. And I write them all the time. And I know a lot of people, when I started writing them and posting them, you know, it felt kind of silly. But now, I mean, it really is a challenge to be able to say as much as you can say in 17 syllables. And so I would say for anybody who is wanting to maybe work on that brevity or maybe be a little bit more clear and concise, even just with their blog writing, maybe try some haikus. You never know what can happen.
Yeah, that is fantastic advice. I think writing short form things like that can help anybody who wants to communicate more clearly in their long form writing as well. So since you shared some of your favorite poets, I will share one of mine. I sadly have not read very much poetry since I graduated from college, but one book that I have read was called Reading Novalis in Montana by Melissa Quasney. And it's been a few years since I've read it, and which is sad because that's the last book of poetry that I read. But I really did love this book. It was a lot of nature-based poetry, if I'm remembering right, and it kind of explored romanticism, and I really enjoyed it.
That sounds great. I want to go look that up right now. Like you, I have not read a lot of poetry since I graduated. I read a lot of poetry in college when I was getting my literature degree. And I always loved whatever poet we were reading at the time. Like, as soon as we got the chance to dive in and really explore the text, I was always really excited to be reading it. But it is kind of hard to just jump into on your own and not be able to kind of like bounce the ideas off. I will say the one poet that I follow consistently is actually an online poet. His name is John Blaise, B-L-A-S-E, and he writes over at thebeautifuldue.com, and that's D-U-E, and he just has these, you know, mostly like 10 or 12 line poems, and sometimes they rhyme and sometimes they don't, and they're just always, kind of like you said about Sinji Moon, just hauntingly beautiful, and they explore just life in all of its forms and growing up and growing old and all of these really cool topics in, you know, 50 words or less. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Kayla. We have so enjoyed having you. Do you mind kind of sharing where we and where your listeners can kind of find you online? So what's your URL or your Twitter handle, kind of like the bigger social medias that you're on?
Absolutely. So you can find me on KaylaHollitz.com, and I'm sure we'll have that linked in the show notes as well. And you can find me on Twitter because, as you probably could tell throughout this episode, I talk about it a lot because I am on there just about 24/7. So I am Kayla_Hollitz there, and then just straight Kayla Hollitz on Instagram and Pinterest and everywhere else. So that's where you can find me so we can chat. And I'd love to have you as a part of our Create Lounge community if you would like to join us on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Central. We are always looking for new creative bloggers and entrepreneurs to chat with. So whether you are listening and you're a regular or you're someone who is new to the community, always really, really fun to chat with you all, even beyond just that chat hour as well.
Yes, Create Lounge is absolutely one of my favorite Twitter chats. I recommend it to everybody who's like, oh, I want to join a Twitter chat, but I don't know how to start. I'm like, yeah, start with Create Lounge. Like, everybody there is so friendly, and you will for sure come away with some like incredible piece of wisdom that you have never thought of before. And I highly recommend it to anybody who's never given it a try before.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we really do try to be, I mean, we really just are a very, very talkative bunch. It's just always so fun to see so many new people, but also so many regulars come to chat. And we've just seen so many collaborations and even businesses come out of people who have met through Create Lounge. So I'm just really excited. I'm really excited to see kind of where we all take this community in the new year after our first birthday in the first week of January, which is really exciting coming up.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the year anniversary with that. And congrats again on launching your poetry collection, Brave Little Bones. And thanks again for joining us here on the podcast today.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Abby and Ashley. It was so fun chatting with the both of you. And I hope to chat soon with some of the listeners tuning in.
Listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.